Sir, the possibility of successfully navigating an asteroid field is approximately 3,720 to 1.
Never tell me the odds.
I'm Pete Mitchell. He's Peyton Jones. And this is the Church Planner Podcast.
Hey, Church Planner, this is Pete Mitchell.
And this is Peyton Jones.
And you're here for a very special episode of the Church Planner Podcast. Whether you knew it or not, this is a special one.
Yeah, but last time was a very special episode. So maybe we just make this one a special episode. Because if they're all very special, none of them are special.
You know what's funny, man? Like after last week's episode, which I don't even know when any of these aired, because that's all Brooks's job.
Yeah, I think that one comes out while we're recording now.
Oh, you think it's coming out today?
Yeah, the one about Phil Yancey?
Yeah. See, I see what you did there.
I'm sick, so if I sound like I have a smoker's cough, I don't. I'm fighting bronchitis and possibly pneumonia. Isn't that fun?
Oh, everyone's got a little touch of pneumonia. Mm. Oh, wow.
Dude, I got the diabetes. The diabetes.
Okay, so they just cut out a whole bunch of great stuff, great conversation that Peyton and I had, and I'm going to finish it right now because there's no way you can take this part out. So, like, I've got all these clients nationwide, right? And we do a weekly training call. And I'm, like, genuinely curious. Like, I think it was Mackenzie brought it up. She's like, okay, in California, you call them a Californian. In Texas, you call them a Texan. In Florida, you call them a Floridian. She's like, what do you call people from Maine? Right. And so I knew some of our people were from Maine.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, hey, Emily, you know, and I explain the whole thing. I go, what do they call you when you're from Maine? And she goes, a maniac. And I'm not kidding, dude.
No way.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Like, usually we call ourselves a maniac. And I'm like, oh, dude, that's awesome. That's great.
I wonder what, because Brooks is from South Carolina. I wonder what they call South Carolinians.
Yeah, I know.
Carolinians?
They call them what?
Carolinians?
I don't know. Because, you know, I mean, the one that I always thought was stupid was Angelinos. Like, I always hated that term.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, us Angelino. You know, if when you're from Los Angeles, like, dude, it's just stupid.
Yeah, but Los Angeles is so in love with itself. Like, you guys didn't need a special name for yourselves. You really didn't. Like San Diegans. You know, like we don't walk around saying we're San Diegans.
Hey, I'm a Planoan.
Yeah.
Planiac. I'm a Planiac.
If we were going to call ourselves, and we have to call ourselves Duggars, you know, because like Diego means Doug, like Saint Doug, you know, but you can't say Saint Doug. San Diego sounds better, you know, Saint Douglas. But yeah, we call ourselves Duggars. I just make that. In fact, I just did.
See, if it were me, I'd be like, I love the name San Diego. I'd be San Diego, like everywhere. Ooh. I'd be like, oh, we're going to San Diego. Ooh. Like, that's how I would say it too, right? Like, yeah. It's such a great name.
Yeah, man. That's like when you hear people talking total English and then suddenly they put Latino in, they go, Latino? And you're like, whoa, like they like transform, like they reshape their whole like mouth into the way they say it. I can't do it.
Totally forgot we had the podcast, and all of a sudden I see this text with the link. I'm like, oh, it's podcasting.
Oh,
I don't know how much of this pre-show is making it in, but I tell you this, I haven't had this much fun in a long time.
Well, you know, it's funny because I went away on break, and
I loved, you know, how you never told me that you went away. I'm like, He's posting on Facebook from Wales. I was like, I'm pretty sure we're not recording this week.
I did tell you, though.
You did not tell me.
Oh, gosh. See, now I'm getting worried about you. Because in the old days, it was always me not telling you. And then I've made a point of telling you.
It's still the old days. You didn't say a thing.
No, this is what happens.
Your
when
memory
dementia
is slipping,
creeps in.
Dude. Your Alzheimer's is kicking in.
That's what people with dementia
you never
think.
Communicated to me.
So, speaking of Wales, I did not talk about this last week. I was going to say, I just feel rested, man. I feel back 100%, minus the fact that I came back with all this jet lag and then got whatever nasty things been going around and have been recovering from that. It's wonderful, by the way, when jet lag meets this nasty flu. I think they call it like the Super K, because like probably like the Angelinos, because they're so lame, like name that virus. And oh, it's with the Super K. That
sure
sounds like something
Special K.
Sounds like some Angelinos would do. They like nifty little names like that. But you know, it's funny because when I was over in Wales, I don't think I talked about this, that I met Johnny Rotten.
Isn't he some musician, dude?
Oh, dude. Johnny Rotten, a.k.a. John Lydon. He was the lead singer of the Sex Pistols.
Yeah, see, I just saw your post, and I was like, I don't know who the guy is, but...
Oh, my gosh. Dude, he's a legend, an icon, a piece of history, like... A musical genius, a creator of an entire genre that spawned genres. Like, to literally, like, to meet him was very surreal to me. He is the Elvis of the punk movement, like the Pope of punk, shall we say. I mean, Johnny Rotten, and brother, he has always been the same dude all these years. He's actually quite moral. Surprisingly, like, he doesn't sleep around. He's been married to the same woman until she died, took care of her, but he was always brutally honest, hated the machine. That's why the Sex Pistols only had one album. They were kind of created like the Monkees a little bit. And when he felt that after the first album, he's like, forget this. I quit. Like, I don't want to be this, like, this image promoted out there. So that's why he called the next band, which he has had ever since, Public Image Limited. And he just made fun of the system. And he's just always been honest. But I mean, shoot, man, like, he's fascinating. But to meet him, it was like meeting a legend, dude. Like, and he was just, he's always been down to earth and who he is and funny as heck. When he was on stage, I don't know if I had talked about that. I don't think I talked about this, right?
No.
So when we're on stage, Barry Waters, well, and I...
apparently I forget everything, so I'm not 100% sure that you haven't talked about it, but I'm 99% sure. Yeah.
That's why I had to double check. It was in the back of my mind. But Barry Waters went, because Andrew's like, so the last punk concert I took her to kind of freaked her out, right? Because all the old punks were there. It was in a really grotty neighborhood. We had to park in this parking garage where we encountered three different types of bodily fluids on the stairwell. One was a bunch of blood. And she's like, I don't want to go to these anymore. And I was like, okay. So I've been taking Bo. And since we're in Wales, I told Barry, hey, man, if you want to come with me. And we caught up, had an amazing time. Barry's always fun. I've been going to shows with Barry since he first got saved and
was
in my church.
How's Barry's wife doing?
She's doing great. Yeah.
Awesome.
Melissa, for those of you that don't know, it's a funny story with Barry. Some of you guys know Barry Waters. He was on the Team Leadership podcast, the Ministry Ninja podcast. I think we even did another one with Barry. I can't remember the name of the other one, but Andrea, Barry, and I have done these podcasts. But Barry got saved in Pillar in Swansea like 20 years ago, came out to Refuge Long Beach and interned there, helped plant Refuge San Pedro with Ruben, absolutely changed his life. Ruben's sister is Melissa. She was the first convert in Refuge Long Beach. Barry was not the first convert, but one of the first converts in Pillar. Anyways, they're on mission together. They get connected and kind of form a relationship, and now, brother, like, they're planting a church there. Barry's planted a couple churches since he's been back. Yeah.
Awesome.
And he's planting one right now, which is just like insane. So the tattoos I have were from the tattoo artist down in that shop. That dude's gotten saved. They're listening to Through the Word all the time. In fact, when place is called Sick Dog Tattoo, and the dude is such a good tattoo artist. I felt embarrassed giving him these because these are like, hey, it's like nothing preschool tattoos, you know, like so simple. And the dude went to Japan and studied under this like master, you know, and is like super gifted. And that's the thing about whales. Sometimes you'll find these people, they pursued their craft and they're in the middle of nowhere. Like no one here would know where Burryport, Wales is, but his shop is there. But anyways, Holy Spirit's just ripping through the shop. All the employees are getting saved. And so when we were in there, Andrew and I both were getting tattoos and they're all coming in to meet us and they're like sharing. By the
way, how was that for Andrea to get a tattoo? Like,
cause she has the coolest tattoo. So there's this girl in there, tattoo artist. Because the tattoo artist that did mine kind of looked at her and said, I'm not as comfortable with what you're asking. You want something really pretty. And I'm going to push you over here. She did the nicest tattoo. Andrew's got like a dragonfly, and in the dragonfly wings are the fingerprints of my two daughters. Oh, and, wow. Yeah, it's really cool looking, but, yeah. So anyways, so Barry's doing that. He's planting a church, that meets over top the tattoo shop where Barry and Melissa live. And then Melissa works a couple doors down in this cafe. They all love her. Like, God is just ripping and people are getting saved. They just baptized a number of people and it's like, dude's just on fire. But he came and heard me preach in the morning. And so as per my Facebook post, that was his comment that night. We were driving back and he goes, that was the most Peyton Jones thing ever. I heard you preach in the morning at Bagland, which is a church we helped plant out of Lloyd Jones's. And he goes, it was, you know, you hear him preach in the morning and go watch a punk show with him at night. And that was like old times. That's the kind of stuff we do. Bunch of people in that church were into music. So we go see shows and stuff. And in my younger days, I might go into the mosh pit. Now, no. So, nice. But anyways, all that to say, you know, we're coming out and we're passing the tour bus. And back from my young days, I knew if you hang out by a tour bus long enough, you get a good chance of meeting who you want to meet. And, so I just said to Barry, hey man, let's just kind of hang back here a little bit. And I go, are you cool? Like, do you want to meet, Johnny Rotten? Cause for me, this is bucket list. Right. I'd never seen him live. He was fantastic, but, yeah, we met him afterwards. Super cool. Got to chat with him a little bit. Could not post what he said. Because I asked him a couple questions and his responses were hilarious, but inappropriate for social media because of his colorful language. But what I was going to say is that the funniest thing about Johnny Rotten is he's always been like that punk thing where he's kind of like, you know, like if he has to blow his nose, he's going to blow his nose. If he has to spit, he's going to spit. And he's not going to go find a spittoon. But the problem is, like, this started with punk shows because punks just do that kind of stuff. And so there's a fine in most cities and stages, like, if you spit on stage, right? It's like a 10-pound fine, which for us would be like $15. So he mentioned, and I barely caught it, but during the show, he was, like, spitting. Like he was doing farmer blows out his nose left and right because it's a winter time, you know, your head gets all gunked up. And I'm serious, man. Like it must have been 100 times he did farmer blows and spat. And afterwards, we overhear him explaining, well, you know, the opening band kind of set me up a little bit because they, and I asked him, like, how much is it to spit on stage here? Because in Edinburgh, it's like 10-pound fine, you know? And and the guy told him, oh, in Swansea, you know, local band said in Swansea, it's only 50p, just like 75 cents. So he got his 50-pound worth, let me tell you.
That's funny.
So anyways, for those of you with weak stomachs listening, I apologize, but punk music is definitely not for you. So, well, Pete, what are we going to talk about, brother?
Great Scott, it's time for this week's topic.
Let's get down to the nitty gritty. I can't do it when I'm sick.
You know,
that was weak.
I just on a related side note, because of the Doc Brown intro, I bought the DeLorean in Fortnite, and now every time I jump in a car, I'm in a DeLorean. I'm just telling you, it's one of the greatest.
Do I have the DeLorean? Like, did you tell me about this? Did I buy it? Are you a true friend?
I don't remember.
I have Knight Rider, but I can't get Knight Rider to stop being Midnight Blue. I can't get it back to black. I don't know what I did.
You just got to go back and change the settings on the car.
Man, I tried and I can't find the black setting. Like, haha, sucker, you touched it.
I don't know what to tell you.
But you got the DeLorean.
But now every time I'm jumping in, it's a DeLorean.
Oh, maybe I do have that because I bought the Back to the Future pack. So maybe I have.
Oh, did you buy the whole thing?
Nice. Oh, yeah. You know me.
Yeah, I do. I remember when you had to buy a Darth Vader.
So, like, I am kind of salty about Fortnite because, you know, like, they had the Winter Lodge and I couldn't open all my prezzies because I left. I went to Wales.
Yeah. I missed the last one, which was a skin.
Was it a good skin?
31st, and so I couldn't get it.
Was it a good skin?
I don't know. I couldn't get it. Couldn't open it.
Well, I do have a theory that in heaven, you'll get that skin.
You'll have all the Fortnite skins?
All the things you ever want. It'll be there. Everything that was righteous and good and pure, you'll have it.
Righteous and pure, talking about Fortnite, where the goal is to kill everybody and be the last person standing.
Like I always tell Andrea, this is how I kind of worked out that the kids could play it. I said, you know, it's elimination. We don't die. We just go back to this like holding place, like this lobby. It's you know, because Andrew really loves the Hunger Games. And I'm like, it's less like picture the Hunger Games without actually dying. So, you know, you just phase out and then you get to come back.
So right? It's a reincarnation game.
How do I put it? It's a technology we don't yet possess game.
Anyway, after we did the great Scott, it's time for this week's topic. We go right back into Smack Talk.
I know. All right. The bungee cord is pulling me back to the topic because the topic, Pete, is actually discipology. Now, you might think, what's that? Discipleology? No. Discipology. That is how you pronounce it.
Sounds like a made-up word to me.
It's totally a made-up word. But, you know, made-up words are words that you make up when the actual word no longer holds the same original meaning. So when we pervert or warp a word's meaning by overuse or misuse, one must, Pete, invent a new word to recapture the original meaning.
Okay.
So the original meaning, discipology, is the art and science of making disciples in the way of Jesus, of course. So I don't know, man, like, you know, and if I had thought this out better, I would have said, Pete, interview me about the book. But I'm going to be like, I'm on Vanderstelt's podcast this week, Carl Vader's podcast. Like, I'm on a lot of podcasts coming up here for it. And man, like the hunger for this book is like off the chain so far. Zondervan is kind of like, okay, this is going to be a big
book. Well, I want to know, let's break it down. Give us the 30,000 foot view. What's the book about?
Yeah. So I'll kind of go back into, first, you want me to share my testimony, how I came
with it? Keep in mind, I'm not going to actually read the book. So whatever you tell me now is how I'm going to be able to describe it to everyone.
Yeah, but Pete, you skipped over my testimony and that's just so not like you. No, I'm teasing. Those of you that know, whenever we do a book interview, we always make them tell our testimony, but I've told that.
I just started hitting, by the way, the decline when Brooke sends me an invite for an interview, I'm like, yeah, no, I don't know who this person is.
No.
About.
Know what he started doing for us, which is kind of cool, is I asked him, any of our interviews, just schedule them outside. So I have an interview at 11 today that's not you and I. So just so you know, we got it going on now.
Good. Because I'm not doing interviews with people I don't know anymore.
No.
I hated that.
I know. But, you know, so going back into this, I'll just say this, like, It really started because back when I work with Mac Lake, Mac and I do this interesting dance back and forth where, you know, he would do this train the trainer thing. And he said, you know, Jesus, he said, you know, something about like, you know, the Lord understood, Jesus understood better than anyone how the brain was designed. He just threw this comment out. And I decided I'm going to study Jesus as a trainer. And so for New Breed, we built this thing called, and I actually asked him if when I ran it for NAMM, can I start incorporating, like rewriting parts of it to put Jesus in there, like what Jesus did? And he said, yeah, but I couldn't change it from like Mac had like 13 adult learning theory techniques that he had really designed, but he had taken them from adult learning theory. And I just went into the scripture and I was like, I'm going to study how Jesus trained. And I'm going to reverse engineer my own train the trainer from that. And so that's what I did. And once I started to study Jesus as a trainer and started creating that content, which will probably eventually become a book. It's already like you guys can fly out to San Diego with the Duggars. And you can hang out with us and learn how to train like Jesus. Like, we have organizations come out and do it.
Can they fly out to San Diego?
Yeah, if they want to go exotic. So, yeah, they can come out here. FCA in Texas flew out. We've had different organizations, Bible League International. Different organizations have come out because once you see it, you can't unsee it, right? It is mind-blowing. There are people on the New Breed team, like Chesley, will say this is the most valuable thing that New Breed has. But once that started, I wanted to study Jesus as a disciple maker. And again, this had started back with NAMM. Mac had said to me, hey, I want you to make some videos, training videos. And one of the modules was discipleship. And so that was the first time that I had worked out the time, teaching, and tactics. And I made a whole video. I think you remember it. Like, I'm a drill sergeant. And I'm like, I'm going to teach you the three T's. Remember that? And I had like the drill instructor hat on and the
did we call it jump school? Because then I would remember.
It was not called jump school, but it's funny as heck. Yeah, I mean, I'm on there like doing the Full Metal Jacket thing because Dan Torres was on that project. We made the best videos, man. They were funny as heck. So they were training for like NAMM church planners. And so like I was saying stuff, and I don't know if I can do this when I'm sick, but I was saying stuff like almost like Hulk Hogan. Like that was the voice I was thinking. Oh, I'm going to rip your head off your neck and pour discipleship down your neck. You know, I was doing that whole kind of thing, you know. And so we had the three T's. It was all illustrated. It was amazing. And while we're doing this, that was the basis of, you know, everything I had studied about Jesus' disciple making. We came back to those three buckets. He spent time with them, he taught them, and he tactically engaged them on mission. So those three T's, you know, you could say there's other ones as well. Like there's three P's. I could turn them into three L's, but I adopted three T's. And as I started, like probably about 3 years ago, maybe over 3 years ago, going into a deep dive in my own like personal devotion and study, going through the chronological gospels and trying to figure out. And this again, Mac had had this diagram where he broke down Jesus's ministry in order. And I was like, huh. I was like, I wonder. And you know, I've come to slightly different conclusions, you know, went through a chronology, but I would argue that in Jesus's first year, he spent time with him. He spoke in the synagogues, but he really just spent time with them. He only recruited six of the 12 in that first year. It's all found in John 1. The other gospels skip over year 1. Mark starts at year 2. Because what happens is in year 1, John tells us they go to the wedding of Cana of Galilee. His mom tries to get him to do a miracle. Obviously, he's cracked out a few miracles before. On the down low, and his mom goes, hey, they're out of wine, nudge, nudge. And he says, woman, which is pointed. He doesn't say mom. He says woman, like almost like, hey, you're overstepping your boundary here. And he says, it is not yet my time, right? Like he knows I have to listen to my father, and it's not yet my time. But he still does it, you know, because when he says, "Woman, it's not my time," she just looks at it, says it. She looks at the servant and says, "Just do whatever he says," you know, like a total Jewish mother. I know he's going to listen to me. And, but then the other gospels start where Jesus says, "The time has come, for I must preach the gospel of the kingdom. For this reason I've come." So all the other gospels start there in year two, which is not year one. Year one was when he settles down. It tells us he settles down in Capernaum. Mark tells us this. And if you do the chronological gospels, you'll see all this. That year is a quiet year. All he's doing is building relationship with those six. It's the two he meets, which is John and Andrew, after his baptism. He has dinner with them. It says the next day, they each invite someone. So they, you know, John invites James, and Andrew invites Peter, his brother. And then Jesus calls Philip. Philip invites Nathaniel. Those are the six, right? So,
it's Phil, by the way.
What's that?
It's Phil, by the way.
Oh, yeah, Phil. His professional name is Philip, but his. Oh, it's both evil and hilarious. But here's the thing. Then in year two, when he says, "For this reason I've come to preach the gospel of the kingdom," that's the teaching year. So each one of these time teaching tactics, there's an emphasis on each of the 3 years of Jesus' public ministry. So in year two, he goes around. That's where the tour starts. That's when all of the miracles happen that Jesus does, and Jesus is teaching them. You could use it as almost like training. He's teaching them the principles, and in practice, he's doing all the miracles. And he says about the miracles that the miracles are signs so that you would believe the message, right? And that I've come from the Father. So, but he says this: the miracles point to the message. They point to the words I speak that you would know that they are authentic and true and from the Father. So that's year two. He just goes on this big preaching tour and does miracles along the way. So he not only teaches about the kingdom, he brings the kingdom through those miracles. Disciples watch everything. They are just spectators in year two. In year three, though, that's when it kicks up a notch. That's when he tactically engages them. If you remember, there are two missionary journeys. There is the missionary journey at the front of the year when he sends out the 12. There is a missionary journey at the very end of that year before he goes to Jerusalem. Now, those are the two bookends, the mission journeys. That is where he sends them out and gives them authority to cast out demons, to heal, to do miracles, and he sends them out preaching. They've never done this before. That's when they come back and say, "Lord, the demons," they've never gotten their hands dirty yet. That's the year he tactically engages them. And in the in-between months, because here's the thing about those two journeys, those journeys would have been, according to Eckhart Schnabel, who is the like foremost New Testament scholar on the theology of mission of the first century, he maintains, he actually does this whole thing. He names them all. These are the villages we know. There were 243 in the region of Galilee. In Galilee and Judea, there were, and he works it out, because in the first one, they go to Galilee. And he says it would have taken 12 people in six teams of two to go through these 243 villages. It would have, and I might be wrong, it might be 232. I can't remember the exact, it's 200 and something. But he says, would have taken them anywhere from 3 to 4 months if they stayed for 2 days. 2 days is how long Jesus stayed in the village of Sychar, where Jacob's well was, a Samaritan woman. So if they're following that practice to bring an entire village to Jesus during that time, 2 days, we can just roughly say that to hit. And he says, do not come back until you've gone throughout all the villages. We know that was a strategy, and that's the duration of time it would have taken. So if we have two, then Jesus on the back end expands it into Judea as well. But now he's got 72, aka 36 teams of two, but much more ground to cover. So again, he says 3 to 4 months, both were strategically that long. So how long does that leave in the intermission between, in the middle part of that year? Anywhere from 6 to 8 months, if my math is right. No, that's not right. 4 to 6 months. And in that 4 to 6 month period, that's when Jesus has Peter walk on water. That's when he has the 12 feed the 4,000 and the 5,000, where the miracle happens in their hands. That's the year that Jesus is tactically engaging them to do. Why? Because he's about to leave them. He's getting them ready for the book of Acts. So, looking at that time, teaching, and tactics order of those 3 years of ministry, I'm not saying that we follow a three-year timeline. In fact, later on, you can see that Paul's not following a three-year timeline, right? He goes too fast in Galatia. He doesn't spend enough time with the Galatians. That's a problem. He's got the teaching and tactics down, but he needed more time and they needed more teaching. So he slows down and recruits more people in a second missionary journey. All that's from Plantology, where I talk about, you know, Paul's learning curve. But this book kind of, and I bring this point out, just like I did in Plantology, that Paul, on his learning curve, where did Paul go back and say, hey, I'm getting this wrong? Who did he go back to? Who is his forerunner? It's Jesus. So Paul has to go back and look at the Gospels and pick Barnabas's brain and pick, you know, anyone he's meeting, the 12, and he's got to figure out, what did Jesus do? And as you watch Paul's progression through the book of Acts, he starts doing exactly what Jesus did. In fact, he does finally adopt a three-year model in Ephesus. Paul's learning curve looks so much like Jesus, where he's deploying them at the end to plan all the churches. It's incredible. And so much so that Rome, Paul never goes there, but he writes there and all of his fellow workers are there because he has really focused on reproducing himself in groups of people. That's why he has all these networks. He ends up planting networks because disciple making was at the heart of the multiplication. And that's what drove me to write this book, was I felt, and I said it in Plantology, I had a whole chapter on this and went into time teaching tactics, but I was like, if Paul put the cart before the horse, surely this is what we've been doing. Our last 15 to 20 years has been all about multiplication, but we needed not to start there. Church planting shouldn't have been the first part of the conversation. We should have been talking mobilization, which is what disciple making is. Jesus learned to mobilize people, knowing that that would, if we could mobilize, multiplication take care of itself. Dave Ferguson, Exponential, stood up last year and said, told a story about a donor where the donor said, Dave, you're talking about multiplication, but I got a concern. What kind of churches are you multiplying? It's just more churches going to be stuck in the mud. And this is what we've done, is we've multiplied churches that don't mobilize. And so for me, this book is now recapturing what made the church in Acts powerful. If you will focus on disciple making like Jesus did for those 3 years, there's a reason he didn't focus on multiplication. He focused on mobilization, knowing that that is the horse that pulls the cart. If we could get that, this is what we're seeing with microchurch. This is what we're seeing with house church movements. This is what we're post-COVID, everything shifted. And we've talked about that. But I want us to go back like Paul and reanalyze everything and be on our own learning curve to go back and say, if I'm not mobilizing, I'm going to just hit the same brick wall in future. And we saw that in Refuge Long Beach, if you remember. You know, I had mobilized really well at the beginning and hadn't realized, you know, that you got to keep doing that. Cause I'm like, oh, we're going to plan all these churches out. And then suddenly I couldn't leave because I had stopped mobilizing. Once I had sent out the first, second, third, fourth batch that I had all trained in the first year, I stopped. And then I had to start retraining all the new converts so that I could leave, you know, all the people that ended up, like Steve and Sarah, you know, all the people that were there at the end that nobody would have thought of them. And they were just powerhouses, just waiting to be mobilized. And I just started pouring into them. I started taking them to Hugh Halter's little day conference when he came. I started taking people that weren't interested. Hey, come here, I want you to check this out. Started getting them the bug. And I'll never forget that Steve gets in the, and I mean you, right? You were one where you got mobilized big time. You know, like I tell people there's not anyone who's ever worked for Pete since we started doing this podcast that didn't get saved. And Pete would say, oh, I'm not an evangelist. But Pete got mobilized. You know, and he just started making disciples. And he,
I'd like to take credit for Travis coming to know Christ. Oh, wait, he was a church planner I hired. Okay.
Yeah. But I mean, everybody we hired who wasn't saved ended up getting saved. And that was all because of you.
I don't know about that, but whatever.
Yeah. But I mean, okay, obviously the Lord, but you're taking time to make disciples. So this is what I'm saying, and I'm sorry I've just diarrheaed at the mouth here, but I get really excited about it.
Oh, you're done? I thought that was a pause before you restarted again.
Yeah. It was kind of like, you know, when you take that balloon and you go, you let all the air out. My air's gone. I'm done.
Just so you know, your mic thought you were doing something funny, so it totally cut out your little squeak noise that you were
making. Oh, man.
So it was just like, it's kind of like that, and then it goes quiet. And then,
Are you serious? Oh, it didn't like that. Yeah. No. Did it pick it up that time?
It did that time.
Okay, all right.
You were less annoying, apparently, to the mic.
Yeah, it was kind of really, I mean, I did a good balloon squeak first time.
I bet you did. You're pretty good at
it. I mean, proof's in the pudding. It got cut out by the mic. Mike's like, that's too good. You're not ready for that.
Making a balloon squeak. Oh my gosh, too funny.
Yeah, so you know, in this book, man, like honestly, this is what I was saying about like going to Wales. I had to recover. I've had to recover from this thing, dude. Like, there's not really. I haven't counted yet. I meant to count at the end of the year how many disciple making books I've read over the last couple years. Discipleship. I've read them all. Like anyone I can get my hands on, I've read. And there was only one that was even close to what I was trying to do in this book. And it's a classic. It's called The Training of the 12. But it's very wordy, and it's not laid out in a way where it's like bite-sized chunks. I thoroughly enjoyed reading it, don't get me wrong. And there's times he hit on stuff. I'm like, see, I wasn't that far off. Eckhart Schnabel's like two volumes, you know, are just huge tomes, like 1,000-page tomes that are rich. And I quote him a ton. But to be honest, most of our disciple-making, discipleship books are like, they just don't talk in detail about what Jesus did. Not in detail. We've got four gospels. And to me, I think in one sense, it's because we don't have them laid out chronologically. We don't think to analyze it like this. And once you see it, you can't unsee it. And what I'm hoping is that this creates a revolution in how we look at disciple making. And disciple making and discipleship are not the same. The way that I put it in the book, and this is all in like chapter one, is teaching is what you do to the masses, right? And Jesus did that. So I don't knock Sundays. If you're going to like teach to a big crowd, fine. I used to knock that. Like in church zero, I had a hard time. Like, hey, if that's your goal, it's a starting point, but it can't be the end point. That's kind of where we go with this. Rick Warren had masses of people, and he solved the crowd problem by devoting his entire ministry from then to like the baseball diamond, assimilation. He wanted people to get discipled. So he started discipleship groups, small groups in his church, in homes. And that, you know, and when you and I sat down and had dinner with him, I remember he just said, you know, he looked over at us and it was said with the right kind of pride. He said, you know, as many people as come on Sunday, we've got double in our home studies and home studies. And during COVID, by the way, it doubled again, right? That's why COVID was a major like turning point for the church. That's why I think this is the time for this, because people got activated during COVID. When they couldn't just go and sit on Sunday, they gravitated towards these small groups. So when you put teaching and time circles overlapping, now you got discipleship, right? But you need that third tactical circle that Jesus introduced in the third year to shift it from discipleship to disciple making. And I have a two columns that compare discipleship and disciple making, because when we say discipleship, we mean all of it, but they're not the same. When you do discipleship, you're thinking believers post conversion, right? You're going through a topic, you're helping them, like, you know, formation, you know, growing in Jesus, you know, and you do that on Tuesday night. So even though people are like, oh, no, that's not, no, that's how it actually works on the ground. Disciple making, though, you start with non-believers. The topic is always Jesus, right? Getting to know Jesus, and you're driving them to conversion, to actually get to know him. And that's disciple making. And so I make that distinction, but you have to learn the tactical circle. The reason we're not able to go and make disciples, because discipleship on Tuesday nights with the coffee cake and the Bible study and the Christians and the prayer group, that's all wonderful. I don't knock that either, because that's time in teaching circles. You got 2 out of 3. That ain't bad. I used to rip on that. And now when I hear people rip on it, I'm like, dude, you're so far off base. Because if you take away the teaching on a Sunday, you're not evangelizing the masses. If you take away the small group with the time and teaching, you don't have people maturing, right? Like, this is all APEST. APEST is a part of all of this. Like, once you, and I talk about this in the book, that you can't knock these different incarnations of the APEST in the church. And all of these happen in the New Testament. And Jesus did them all. He had small groups and he rocked the masses with teaching. None of this is bad, but what Jesus did was that third thing, and that's where the gap is. That's what I want this book to address, to easily get you moving into the tactical circle. And that's what we're doing. And I feel like next time, because I didn't break down how, I wrote more than a book. I wrote 2 books. I wrote a 400-page big fat book that'll sit right next to your copy of Plantology. And then I wrote a journal for the everyday disciple maker. Because you guys as leaders, you're going to read the big book. You're going to love it. But the journal is for everybody in your church plant, right? It's to mobilize them. And they don't want to read a big 400. They just want a little devotional book. It's going to get them making baby steps every day. And because we're partnering with Through the Word, they don't even need the journal. The journal is a chronicle of their own transformation. But the MVP, right? The bare minimum that they need is the audio guides on Through the Word. Through the Word is partnering to do an audio 28 days to become a disciple maker. And we train you for 10 minutes a day, devotional style, telling you stories from the New Testament of how Jesus did this, and then giving you a micro step to apply every single day. And right now, brother, we got 3,000 people in a beta test going through it, and they're raving. But they're like, oh my gosh, I can do this. Like, it's so empowering. And I'm telling you right now, like, one of the guys who teaches us up in Grand Rapids on the ground, because we, you know, we've got this being taught online. We've been running this for 3 years. this guy online, this guy up in Grand Rapids, Dave Block, he's one of our trainers. He said, you know, he's telling us stories all the time. He's like, you know, I've been training, and he said, I checked back in with this woman, and, you know, she was great because she had like this little group. And I remember when it clicked for her, and I checked back in, and she's like, oh no, I got 6 of them going right now. You know, six groups of 5 people in each. She got 30 people coming to Jesus in these groups. And I'm just telling you, brother, like Pete and I, man, we used to sit there and Pete would ask me when we first started this podcast, he's like, what can we offer to churches? What do pastors want? And I said, they want to mobilize their people. They don't, they are like coaches in the pulpit, and they want their people to put the helmet on and the shoulder pads and the kit and get out on the field and play the game. This is a system to do that. And all I'm saying is all I've been able to do, Pete, is just outline very clearly what Jesus modeled and asked the disciples to do in the Great Commission. Now you go make disciples by doing these things, by going, by baptizing, evangelizing, by teaching them what? To obey. That's life formation, right? And I'll be with you walking to the end of the age, walking in the power and presence of the Holy Spirit. You do these five things. That's how you make disciples. And so time teaching tactics, man, that's the overview.
When does your book actually come out?
So it's out March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, but you can actually go on to Amazon right now and pre-order both books. If you do,
The full name of both books.
What's that?
Give them the full name of both books.
The first book is called Disciplology, The Art and Science of Making Disciples. The second book, which is the journal, is called Journey to Disciple Making, a Disciplology Journal. And so it goes alongside the audio guides. You can use it if you're reading the big book, but it's 28 steps, just like the audio guide. So while you're listening to the audio guides, everyday devotional style, the journal is there. It's not the exact same text. It's the same principles. I wrote them. And I also wrote the audio guides, but copyright, I couldn't make them exactly the same. But you've got discussion questions, because what it's meant to do is actually be a record of your journey, just like the Gospels are a record of the transformation of Simon into Peter, right? The other people who Jesus changed their name,
Phil into Philip.
Yeah, Phil into Philip. Yes, exactly. Levi into Matthew. Like where they became these knuckleheads who didn't think they could do anything, to being people that turn the world upside down. Like that woman's got six groups. And by the way, I just had dinner with another guy who listens to Through the Word and is doing the exact same thing. Right. Just told me a story. I have six groups of five people each. It's funny how these things are just happening. They're just happening out in the wild as we keep doing this. And so it's amazing to me. So God is doing it. So, all right. Well, hey, go pick those up. They're at Amazon. You can find them everywhere. I mean, it's actually like Barnes & Noble. You can go to barnesandnoble.com, find target.com, Pete. I made it into Target. And the book will actually be probably hard copy in Barnes & Noble this time, because it's not a church planning book. So it's going to have a wider distribution. You've arrived if your book winds up at Hobby Lobby. That's my goal. I'm just saying it right here. Nail my colors to the mast. If my book gets to Hobby Lobby, woo! Just saying.
I love it.
All right. Well, hey, guys, thanks for listening. And Pete, thanks for letting me rattle on about the book. Won't be the first or last time, I'm sure.
And remember, if you want to reach the ones that nobody's reaching, you need to go where nobody's going and do what nobody's doing.